Welcome to our podcast, Psychiatric Services, From Pages to Practice. In this podcast, we highlight new research or columns published this month in the journal Psychiatric Services. I'm Lisa Dixon, editor of Psychiatric Services, and I'm here with podcast editor and my co-host, Josh Berezin. Hi, Josh.
Hi, Lisa. Happy New Year.
Thank you very much. It is 2019. It's been 2019 for several days already.
Yes, we're well on our way.
Let's get started.
Sounds good. Next up, we have Judith Cook and colleagues on mental health self-directed care financing, efficacy in improving outcomes and controlling costs for adults with serious mental illness.
And I just want to say, Josh, I'm really excited about this article.
I think we're both excited about this article.
I'm excited about most RCTs, but like this one.
Yes,
really is.
You love all of your children psychiatric services. You don't play favorites, but right. Once in a while, one of your children does exceptionally well,
and you
want to make sure you point out. But no, right. we both think that this is a really important study, not just because of the topic, but we think it has the potential to really inform policy in kind of a big way. All right, so what are we talking about here? Now, self-directed care, for those of you who haven't heard about it, is a concept that's first developed in the physical and developmental disability world and has a little bit of preliminary evidence for SMI participants. So I think the basic idea here is that in most government-funded programs, you know, the government is funding agencies to provide services for people, but this kind of flips it on its head, and the idea is to get that money directly into participants' hands so that they can decide how those dollars are spent.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that for the participant, it's aiding recovery and allowing people to remain in the community. And then for the administrators, it's hopefully saving money by reducing costly services like inpatient admission.
Yeah. So just to be clear, that it gives individuals with SMI, or the notion is to give people the power to buy the goods and services that they choose.
Right. And I think it's interesting to sort of drill down a little bit into actually how this works. So in practice, the way that they actually did this in the study was that the participant in self-directed care would work with a staff member to develop a recovery plan. That plan is going to have various goals, and then they're going to develop a budget where each of the lines of the budget is tied specifically to one of those recovery goals.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, there is kind of an oversight step where the program manager is going to approve the budget, and then the participant's working with staff to actually procure the goods and services. But if the purchases are tied to one of the goals, it could be for things that would be not traditionally included in like a government benefit package, like massage therapy, buying a cell phone or computer, buying clothes for a job interview, buying a bus pass instead of relying on like AccessoRide or something like that. So it really puts control over recovery financially into participants' hands.
Right. And I think just to echo, it's not giving a blank check.
Right.
There's a process, a support process that I think provides some accountability and help in implementing this.
Right. This study, as we mentioned, there's some preliminary like program evaluation evidence for self-directed care in this population, but this is a randomized control trial, specifically of 217 people in the public mental health system in Texas who have serious mental illness, over 18, understand English, and are eligible for this set of rehab and clinical services that generally includes case management, psychosocial rehab, peer services, residential services, crisis services, various other clinical services. So it's a benefit package that is geared towards this population. This didn't include homeless people. This study didn't include homeless people, people who are cognitively impaired, people with a history of violence.
Mm-hmm.
So they ended up randomizing 115 people in their sample to get self-directed care and 102 to get basically treatment as usual.
Yeah, the control here was care as usual.
Care as usual.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking to see if there's differences between self-directed care and the control group on recovery outcomes, clinical outcomes, cost, and satisfaction. And just imagine that recovery was primarily measured through interviews using the recovery assessment scale and then a couple of other.
Yeah, so recovery was their primary outcome.
That's right. So we already talked about what the actual intervention was. Some other interesting points here are that they had a managed care organization carve out the self-directed care services. So that was, the whole thing was implemented. The money was passed through a managed care organization who was doing, focused particularly on this program. The budgets people get for self-directed care were $4,000, which corresponds to the average, regional averages for services. They're not including inpatient, not including crisis, not including medications. That was just provided as it usually would be for both the control and the intervention group.
Yeah, and there were some other little methodologic details. Individuals were followed for 2 years. Telephone interviews were done at 12 and 24 months, which got most of the self-reported outcomes. Service utilization data were obtained from administrative records. 34% of the individuals had a diagnosis of schizophrenia, 41% had a diagnosis of major depressive disorder, and 26% had bipolar disorder.
So over time, the self-directed care group has better recovery outcomes, particularly goal orientation and personal confidence.
Right. So the total recovery score was higher in the self-directed care group. P-values and all of that.
Yeah, and they also had better self-esteem and coping. So it's not just that they're also reporting their own improvements in recovery. They also had twice the odds of being employed over time and over four times the odds of being enrolled in formal education over the course of the 2 years. So in terms of the money, they had lower total service costs than the control groups, but the differences weren't significant. So essentially, the programs didn't cost. They were, it was budget neutral. That's right. So a few other details, though, is that the self-directed care group was more likely to have no costs in a lot of different service areas, but not for psychotherapy, where the self-directed care group had higher utilization.
Which I think is really interesting. So people chose psychotherapy.
Yes. The other interesting thing is that a lot of people used the money to buy a non-traditional service, and they bought a wide variety of it, but the largest proportions were for transportation, communication, medical services, and then residential services as well.
Yeah, so again, just to so people get a sense of the scale, 21% of folks used transportation, 17% communication, 15% medical and residential, 14%. So it's not like the majority of people were using any particular service, but people altogether used a variety of different services. Yeah, there were a couple of other findings worth reporting.
Oh, definitely the satisfaction data. So 2 years, 60% of people who got self-directed care said they were very satisfied with their mental health services versus 38% in the control group.
Right. And then, again, just to balance it out, there were no differences in actual symptoms and psychiatric symptoms between the two groups, but there was a greater reported overall health in the self-directed care group, but not psychiatric symptoms.
So we sort of led this segment by saying how we were both excited about it. Why do you think this study stands out for you in terms of its potential impact and importance?
First of all, this is a rigorously conducted study. It's a randomized controlled trial, and that would be the gold standard for evidence-based practice to determine or identify evidence-based practices. So we have number one, rigor. And then number two, the rigor applied to this very exciting intervention that just supports the notion that at least that people with serious mental illnesses, when given the chance to be in charge of their care in a supported way, do better. And so I think that this has got to put self-directed care on the map in a way that it hasn't been before.
And I just, the whole, kind of from soup to nuts, the concept and the execution of the study, like you said, very impressive. But particularly, I just like the idea that you can get better outcomes for the same amount of money just by kind of listening to and empowering people, that people know what they need in a way that an agency or large program might not be able to do. Mm-hmm. So I think it's, you know, kind of the definition of a recovery-oriented stance.
I would just say this, that the process, again, is supported. Mm-hmm. And in some sense, interactive. Mm-hmm. It's not just, oh, you know, take this checkbook and go do what you want to do with it. Mm-hmm. It's embedded, the self-directed care and the agency around purchasing is embedded in a very, very supportive context in which recovery and goals are articulated and there's a dialogue about how to get there. And just to be balanced and even-handed, the paper talked about the fact that they weren't able, they didn't estimate the costs of the actual administration of the program. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that, and I don't know how that would tip the balance in terms of how expensive the program is. But I do want to emphasize that again, they have these managers or supporters that are helping the individual implement the model. But you're absolutely right in the sense that it brings to life a recovery-oriented approach in a way that's, I think, can be transformative. So that's it for today, the first podcast of 2019. 11 more, right, Josh?
Yep, not
You're
our
with
last.
It? You're with it?
I'm with you.
We invite you to visit our website, ps.psychiatryonline.org, to read the articles we discussed in this episode, as well as other great research. Also, we remind you to check out something new, the Editor's Choice Topic Collection, which is available now. This is something that I have put together with the Young Psychiatrist Group that is working with the journal. We have assembled collections of the best articles on particular topics each month. So the first month, the topic is going to be integrated care, and you'll be able to click and see the kind of a comprehensive summary of, say, 10 different articles that have focused on integrated care in the journal for like the last 5 to 10 years.
That is fantastic. Yeah, so, I will be using it.
Yeah. So if you have, really, it's like a little curriculum, mm-hmm. and you want to learn, you want to get updated on this particular topic. So every month we're going to have a new set of Editor's Choice available, and you can sign up and get an email that will lead you to the website that will have all these articles. It's kind of like people say, Lisa, can you do special issues on a particular topic? Well, what we can do very easily is sort of do a special online issue in which we put together all these cool articles on specific topics that you might want to learn about.
That's great. How do I get there?
So you get there, you sign up. You sign up at appi.org/ETOCS. appi.org/ETOCS. We also welcome your feedback on the podcast. Please email us at psjournal@psych.org. I'm Lisa Dixon.
I'm Josh Berlin.
Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time.